We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, Episode 9. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mint_inc. A couple of things I want to touch on before we get into our episode today. I found out that my tenant is being charged pet rent of $50 a month. So that's pretty cool. So my cash flow will increase by 50 bucks a month. Which is pretty nice. It wasn't included in my first payment, but I followed up to see what was going on, and they let me know that I'll be receiving that payment going forward for the pet rent. So I guess technically it's not renting for 900, it's renting for 950. So that's pretty good. Something else, things are going pretty well overall with the property. Got my first mortgage payment coming up. Property manager has been pretty cool for the most part. They're not always, I'm on a texting basis with the person at the company who I'm usually in touch with, and she's been pretty good, just kind of getting me my answers for things very quickly. So things have been going well on that front, no complaints. Right now, just trying to figure out the finances and how I'm going to finance my next deal, which I plan to do in the first half of next year. A resource that I would like to feature today is a book about homeownership for veterans. So if you have any family or friends who are veterans looking into homeownership, this book is definitely a must. It's called Making the Most of Your Veteran Affairs VA Loan, an active duty service member and veteran's guide to homeownership loan benefits. It was written by David Nelson Jr., who I know we are connected on Instagram. We talk pretty often. His Instagram is at dnelsonjr_forreal. He's a veteran. He's a real estate investor. He has multiple doors, I believe, in the DMV area. You can find the link in his bio. It'll also be included in the show notes and on the IG post. So wherever you'd like to access that, feel free to do so. Very excited about this episode with Kometic Capital. I mean, I was really excited just kind of going through the podcast and editing and listening to it. I know everyone's going to get some great value out of it. Looking forward to hearing what you all think. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Here with me, I have Ashley and Darian White from Kometic Capital. They are out of the Baltimore, Maryland area. Very excited to dive in and learn more about the great work they're doing. Thank you both so much for joining today.
Hey, man. Thanks for the invite.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Yeah, always nice to connect with, you know, people in the space that's doing good things. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So starting off, tell us about what your childhood was like and what you saw or what you didn't see that shaped your views of building wealth.
Great question. Let's start with that.
So my childhood, I would say I had a pretty good childhood. Like, I don't really have a lot of complaints. I was definitely blessed to have both my parents in my life. I also am the oldest of three children, my younger brother and also my younger sister. So I learned a lot, you know, just being in that kind of a space. I mean, we don't come from, you know, trust fund money or anything like that, but my parents have always, you know, they've always worked. My mom, actually, she had a daycare. So, you know, after a while, you know, she was working a 9-to-5 grind. And then when my sister was born, you know, looking for daycare and things like that is really expensive. So she just decided to start her own daycare. And so she, you know, started her entrepreneurial journey. And so I think, you know, as a child growing up with that experience, that kind of like put that seed in my head, like, oh, okay, like you can do for yourself. Also, my dad, he was in the restaurant industry. However, after a few years, him and my mom and my grandparents actually had a catering company. So they were actually like, you know, doing something on the side. So throughout my childhood, again, like both of my parents were going, you know, through entrepreneurial routes. And so, you know, they definitely did, you know, a really good job during the time, but it didn't like, you know, last forever. And so I guess what I learned from those experiences is that, you know, definitely go ahead and take the leap. But, you know, sometimes when you fail, you have to figure out a way to kind of like pick it back up. And so I think that, you know, that's one thing that I also saw, like, yes, it was, there was some success in that. And then also, you know, entrepreneurship journeys, but there was still a lot of failure and they didn't use that failure to motivate them to push it to the next level. So I think that, you know, learning that kind of helped, you know, with our business and making sure that we build it. And so when, you know, we do fall down, we can learn how to get back up. So I learned a lot from that. And I think that, you know, that again contributed a lot to, you know, my childhood. And then high school, you know, I definitely think high school and education, things like that were always important as well. So even, you know, throughout, you know, when I was younger, my mom and my dad always made us do homework. So our summers weren't just like, oh, free, you can do whatever you want. Before you do what you want, you do your homework, get your education first. So education did always come first. And so that was kind of like the thing that was always important to me. So I was like, yeah, like I'm gonna go to college and, you know, that's gonna make me have a better life and things like that. And so, you know, I definitely took that route, but I wish that there was another way for me to not have to take out like student loans because, you know, that is, you know, part of the process, unfortunately. But going to college and getting my education definitely, I think, helped, you know, get me to where I am right now and help us build, because we're still learning and education is still a huge part of our lives. So not to ramble, but, you know.
No, you're good.
Those are the things I think that, you know, helped me in my journey.
Definitely. Yeah, so my story is a lot different from Ashley. I was born and raised in a small town in Hosky, North Carolina, in the middle of like the sticks. So like, but I grew up with a very close-knit family. So early on, even though I didn't really have my father in my life, I was fortunate enough to have like all my grandparents in my life, all my aunts in my lives, all my uncles in my lives. So I got to see a lot of different examples of people who took the college route, people who were involved in entrepreneurial endeavors. One of my uncles owns an auto shop. And then even some of my aunts had invested in rental property, and my other aunt had her own fabric business where she would make draperies and these like fine, like interior, like design features. So, and you know, she's still doing that to today. So I had like glimpses of like, well, there is another way. Obviously that whole like college narrative was definitely pushed because, you know, oftentimes coming from the areas we come from, we're not exposed to much opportunity and resources, and we don't have really access to resources. You know, education is the only way out. And you know, there's always a point, Byron Allen said earlier today, earlier a few days ago, that pretty much, you know, you gotta have knowledge, but you also gotta have access to resources. So, you know, definitely took the educational route, graduated with a bachelor's in industrial engineering, that afforded me, you know, a great salary starting out. So I was able to, you know, we was able to like make moves as far as, getting our, you know, first property, first rental property. But yeah, that's a little bit about my childhood. You know, I'm an older brother of three brothers. Although we're got a twin brother, and then I got a brother that's like 1 year younger than me. And he's like a little bit bigger than me. So it's like, yeah, it was always, you know, growing up, you know, it's always, yeah, you know, in a single parent household, you had to get it. You know, you had to like
Like, if you ain't go get it, like, either your brother was going to eat your food or, like, you would just be, like, you know what I mean? Not that we ever were hungry or that we never really needed any of the major things.
Yeah.
But we still, you know, there were still times where, you know, we wouldn't have access to, you know, you know what? The biggest thing was really just not having access to my mother how I really would have liked. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, as far as, like, you know, her being able to, like, just be around us, you know, we have a very close relationship, but still, like, she was always working. And it was always, she was always working out of necessity to provide for us. So that was, you know, something that really, I think, shaped me as far as, you know, wanting to invest, wanting to build wealth, you know, wanting to figure out that other way.
Definitely. So your career background is engineering. What is your career background, Ashley?
My career background is in higher education administration.
Okay. Cool. Awesome. So engineering, higher education administration. And I could tell, you know, you saw some glimpses and some entrepreneurship that kind of was planted in you as kids. But as adults, what inspired you to get into real estate? Like, what was it that, you know, inspired you and said, you know what, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to build some wealth.
Hey, man, failure. Failure. All right, so growing up, right, we had, like, examples. I had examples of, like, entrepreneurship, right? So, like, I was selling, like, candy, selling, like, it, like, any, like, video games. Like, we even had a lawn care service, shoveling the snow. It was always, like, some type of, like, hustle. Like, I don't know. Like, as a kid, it was like, you know what, let's just, like, make some money, get enough money, go to the movies, you know what I mean? Invite a lady out and, you know, just buy her some popcorn, you ball it, right? I mean, it was like middle school, you know, high school. So it was always like some type of grind. So, I mean, really, like, from all those experiences, right, I kind of, like, just learn, like, you know, little things, right? Like, you know, how to focus on, like, trends, right? How to, like, know your customer, how to, you know, how to define, like, a good product from a bad product. You know, things, just these type of things. So really, like, it wasn't until after going through college to where, you know, I got in the workforce. I was working for, like, honestly, it probably was like 3 months or 4 months, but I quickly learned, like, yo, this isn't for me. Like, it's just not, I can't do this for, you know, I don't know, 40 years. Part of it was I was commuting, like, all the way to a town called Reston from Baltimore, or right north of Baltimore. And it was like a 3-hour commute one way, I had like 5 hours back. So I'll just be driving. I look net left to me, and like, they just, like, people just look miserable. Like, we're stuck in traffic. They look miserable. She look like she like 68. Homie look like he like 85. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to be like, I don't want to be in this situation. This isn't the way. Like, I'm not going to make this money fast enough for me to be able to generate real wealth. You know, the money that they say, oh, well, your money makes money. I mean, well, if you got a dollar, I mean, sure, you can probably make something with a dollar, but you know what I mean? You know, you need access to leverage, access to capital, to be able to generate, you know, the type of residual income that's going to be able to support you. And, you know, we can get into that later on, but kind of like, really, it was failing at these other businesses, failing at these other endeavors, and then thinking, you know, being frustrated with the 9-to-5 grind and, you know, and how anticlimactic that was when I actually got into the workforce. And it was putting that together and say, well, you know, what else is out there? And then, you know, from there, I just started self-educating, listening to podcasts. Literally every time we would drive, because we would go up to Delaware to see family, like, frequently. Every time we would drive, she would want to listen to music. I would, like, sneak in, like, a podcast. Like, especially when I drove, I was just listening to a podcast. And then eventually she was like, hey, what is this? What is this, you know, house hacking thing? You know, what are these multi-families like? So it really started, you know, from the frustration, and then, you know, that transition to getting some information, seeking further knowledge, and then from there we just started taking action.
Definitely. So I take it you had to do some convincing.
Yeah, I was saying something definitely. Yes, it did take some convincing, because as far as 9-to-5, my job was a little different. So I still had a pretty hectic commute. So I was traveling to outside of D.C. So depending on the day, you can probably get to D.C. from Baltimore maybe an hour and 10 minutes, maybe an hour, to, like if you're going to drive crazy. But it was still pretty hectic. So some days it could get upwards of an hour and a half, 2 hours. So I'm spending between 2 to 4 hours on the road. Per day. So it's like, okay, well, eventually you can only listen to but to so much music, you know, and it's all saying the same thing. And it's not like it's teaching me anything. I like the beat, but that's all I'm pretty much getting out of it. And so he would like drip little things on me here and there, you know, when we would drive together. So when I was driving by myself, I'm like, maybe I should start checking out some of this stuff. So I actually like, you know, went through text messages. He sent me like a Bigger Pockets podcast, Dave Ramsey, like just all like, you know, a bunch of different ones. I'm like, okay, so let me check these out. And I actually started to like, okay, like I could actually relate to some of the stuff that they were saying. And so I think, you know, once I started like learning more about like the real estate investing, I felt myself starting to kind of get not as interested in my 9-to-5 because I am passionate. I was passionate about education, higher education. And, you know, I think it is important to educate people about taking that risk of going to college because I feel like that's the piece that's missing in higher education. It's like, oh, yeah, go to college. Everybody should go without the full understanding as like as far as like what that actually means. Right. However, you know, it's still a lot of like politics and bureaucracy and things like that that are within that space. And so it's like, okay, these people, they don't like making data-driven decisions. So, okay, let me like try to like refocus my energy on maybe something else, but try to use the income that I'm making from the 9-to-5 to help push, you know, whatever it is that we wanted to do, because we did try multiple things. So we had a cookie business, like we had, he had this business where, you know, like a sticker that you can put on a bumper sticker type of thing, like stick one, save one, you know, and now you see the rookie driver stickers like everywhere. So it's like, that was actually a pretty good idea, but we didn't have the access to capital. And so with having a 9-to-5, you can use that as a way to, you know, access capital to push and fund your dreams. So that way you can open up other doors for opportunities. So I definitely think having long commutes helped a lot because between driving, you know, he was driving, 3 to 5 hours a day. I was driving, you know, 2 to 4 hours. And then, you know, eventually I was actually going into downtown D.C. So sometimes for me, that was also like 4 to 5 hours on a train. So we were like, we had a lot of time to really learn both together and then also like going back and forth to work. So I definitely think that, like, you know, Darian was saying, like, having failures and, you know, using that like, that energy to push us into, you know, into our business and trying to fund, you know, our futures because our parents did work a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because with those failed businesses, right, like, they clearly couldn't retire, so they had to continue working. But, you know, not being able to spend that quality time that really matters, I think that's something that's important to both of us. And we want to make sure that that's something that we can provide for the kids that, you know, we plan to have in the future.
Definitely, definitely. And there's several things that I really like that you mentioned. So you seem to sound like you both had horrendous commutes, but, you know, you made the best of it. You use it to educate yourself. You used it to learn, listen to podcasts. Just kind of explore this new venture that you wanted to do. And of course, like sharing with each other, I think that was great. And then also, you know, just using your job to fund what it is that you wanted to do. So I think that's very, very powerful. So next, we'd just love to hear about your first deal. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, gotcha. So yeah, our first deal, right? All right, so perfect transition, right? So we were getting all this knowledge, right? We were in the car driving, listening to podcasts, right? And we would get like drops of information, right? And it would be like, you know, from listening to one podcast, you're not going to get, or even reading one book, you're not going to get everything that's going to be able to get you to where you want to go, right? But you got to start somewhere, right? So we started learning these like key pieces of information, right? I mean, even though we had good paying jobs, we still have student debt. Right, we still have student debt. We still have bills. Right, this is our first time, you know, supporting an entire place. We had our own apartment at the time, you know, had a new car, had like, you know, responsibility, right? You know, bills. So like, we still couldn't find a way to like save as much money as like what we would need for like a down payment, right? Or at least that's what we thought at the time. So I was like, what can we do? What can we do that's free, right? It doesn't cost anything, right? So we found out that we could reach out to a realtor and we could start getting deals, right? They go sign us up for MLS search, right? A query, they go in, they set up the criteria, what you're looking for, multifamily, this zip code, blah, blah, blah. Right? You tell them what you want. And then they'll set up that screener and it'll send you, you know, properties as they come on market, right? So that was free. That didn't require any cash out of our pocket, right? I mean, they wouldn't take us out to actually go see the properties, but at least we could like see the properties, right? We were in the game. So from there, we just started analyzing deals. It started out slow, right? It was like, we would analyze maybe like 3 deals a week. You know what I mean? Like it started off kind of slow, like, you know, but then we kind of picked it up over time. The next thing we did was, all right, again, you know, don't have much cash right now. What can we do? So it was, hey, we can reach out to a banker and we can find out if we do have enough cash. I mean, I didn't know exactly how much you needed. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I was like, we might as well go. It's not going to cost anything. We might as well go the next step and then we'll figure it out when we get there. You know, I mean, so did that, reached out to a banker. They said, oh, well, you got to do this and this to get your credit right. You know, I had horrible credit because I made horrible decisions with credit cards when I was in college, like everybody or most people, right? So I had to fix my credit. We started paying down like, you know, bills, past due parking tickets, like all the other, you know, all the other stuff that comes along with living life. And, you know, from there, we got to a point that, okay, we had the credit. After that, it was trying to figure out down payment. So I guess you want to tell that story about FHA and all that?
Yeah, so once we figured out about the down payment and figured out that, okay, this is our first time buying a house, and like talking to our lender, that's when we learned about like, oh, grants. So we're like, oh, grants? What is that? So they told us that it's free money that you can pretty much get. And also if you attend classes, you know, that's how it can help you qualify, like once you get your credit score right and things like that. And so we did that. It was what, like 8 hours worth of courses. It was 2 Thursday evenings that we had to go to. And so after work, our super long commutes, we go and we do these classes and we learned a lot of information about like, you know, things like what to look for, like the importance of, you know, getting a homeowner's inspection, the importance of homeowner's insurance, the importance of all these different things. And then, you know, come find out, okay, 3.5% down off the purchase price, you know, so that helped out a lot. And then
that was a game changer. 3.5%, so like, you know, $100,000 house, you're talking about $3,500, right? You're gonna have other costs in there, like the inspection, there's like $250, the appraisal, those are a couple hundred, maybe like another $300. Mm-hmm. But it was manageable, right? So, you know, that was, you know, I was thinking 20% down, 20% of 100K is going to be around $20,000, right? Yeah, $20,000. Right. Like, still got student loans. We still got student loans today. But, you know, I mean, the interest rate is manageable right now. I mean, single digits and it's low. So
it's a little more comfortable.
Yeah. We're going to invest that money, you know, where we get a higher return. But, you know, at the time, you know, we still had it. So once we found out that, okay, we can get access to these listings, we can start vetting deals, we can get access to this funding, we only need 3.5% down. All right, cool, let's start looking at properties, you ready? Right, we got our pre-approval letter, we handed our pre-approval letter proudly to our agent, let's go, we was ready. So we start looking at properties, we start doing walkthroughs, right? Boots on the ground, right in it, which is the best way to go starting out because you wanna make sure, like, we wanted to make sure that we knew a little, but we knew we didn't know a lot. Like there was a lot that we didn't know, right? So, you know, sometimes that can be a dangerous place. And there's always uncertainty. There's always an anxiety I get when I close on any deal, right? Just because you never know the future, even though, you know, everything looks right on paper, real life happens. Especially if you do like significant rehabs like we do. But you know, so it was, you know, that anxiety was there, right? And that anxiety was there throughout the whole process. Right. But, you know, we started putting these pieces together, started getting out, looking at properties, had our inspector you know, a few times. The inspector was expensive. It was like, you know, $200-$250, like an inspection, right? But it's worth the money because when you walk, you know, if you buy a bad deal, it's going to cost you way more than $200. So you want to know exactly what you're getting into, especially if you have no experience and you know what I mean? If you don't know what a Raptor is, if you don't know, if you start in real estate and you're really trying to do it big, you got to go these routes. You can't, don't take shortcuts. You know what I mean? Right. Especially early on. That's the one thing I learned. If you take shortcuts, it's going to cost you. You're going to have to pay. It's going to be more difficult later on. Just handle it at the front. And, you know, you can keep pushing through, right? Because along the way, there were always obstacles. Like, there's always obstacles, right? But you just got to figure out a solution to the problem and then move on to the next, right? And then you learn and you grow, and over time, you'll get better. But, yeah, so that's how we really, really started. And then eventually, we found the property.
It was After we looked at probably
10 properties.
10 properties.
That we was going to go see.
Yeah.
But we ran a deal on literally probably like 55 houses. Yeah. Right. Totally. 55 multifamilies. Like, so it was literally like, you know, we were comfortable. We knew what a good deal looked like at this point. Right. So it was a 3-unit multifamily. It was fully rented out. It was occupied by one tenant, which was kind of risky because, you know, it's one person paying everything. Right. Instead of three. But it was a assisted living facility. So the assisted living facility, I think it was paying, how much was it paying?
33?
Yeah, I think like $3,300. Mm-hmm. And I think she had put a sizable down payment down, mm-hmm. right? So this is another trick or another like tip or whatever, or information, whatever. So whenever you buy a property that currently has tenants, right? Typically those tenants have to put security deposits down, right? So the landlord is supposed to escrow that money, right? So that money is really the tenant's money. It's just, you know, put on hold. So anytime a seller sells a property, make sure whenever you go to closing that you collect those security deposits that were a part of, you know, the leases for your new tenant. So, you know, that again decreased our overall cash that we had to bring to the table. So, you know, we bought it for 150, was bringing in like $3,300 a month. I think the note was around $1,300, $1,400. So it was a decent spread in there. Wow. You know, it was FHA, so we had to move in one unit, right? So we knew the plan was that eventually we would have to, you know, scale them down and get into one unit, right? So fast forward, you know, we go to closing, you know, we're nervous as all ever. And like literally, you know, we walk out and we sign the paperwork and it was surreal. We both signed, walked out. And like, it was like, oh, okay. All right. So now what? Like we own this property. Like, hey, it was cool. We signed it, you know, taking the pic, cool. But now like, oh, all right. It's really real now. Right. It's really real. So after that, you know, just fast forward. We had, you know, a couple issues with the tenant. She couldn't really afford to pay for that bigger property because it was a new business. She was scaling up, mm-hmm. right? That's why you always want to try to talk to the tenant directly, and you want to find out as much information that you can from anybody that's associated with that property, because you can always get, like, bites of information that can help you make a better decision. So, you know, we didn't do that, but we found out that she couldn't afford to pay. So we went to her, we talked to her. Instead of evicting you, how about we just scale you down, right? So instead of having 3 units, you'll have 2 units, right? And it'll be a win-win. We'll cut your rent down, and, you know, it'll be a win. So we scaled our rent down, I think, to like $2,100, and then we moved into the top unit, right, which is a requirement for the FHA program. So here we were. You know, we had our first property. We had significant money down. We're living in the property. Everything's good. You know what I mean? They're living there. They're paying for our mortgage. You know, we're making, you know, a couple hundred dollars. So everything's good. I mean, this was, you know, we had just moved from our apartment. So this was a win. That was our first deal.
That's amazing.
Still got it today.
Wow. And how many doors do you have now?
So 12. We have 12 right now, and we have another 6 under contract that we're hoping to close before the end of the year.
Wow. And when did you get the first one? How many years ago was that?
That was back March 2017.
Wow. So from 12 to almost, from one to almost 20 in basically like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Wow. So talk to us about how you go from the house hack to where you are now. The strategies, like the strategy you use and how you've been able to scale up that quickly, because that's incredible.
Gotcha. All right. So, all right. This is
a loaded question.
This is one of the funnest parts of the real estate strategies, right? Honestly, we did every strategy that we could think of that made sense, right? So, as far as finding deal, okay. So at this point, right, we knew what good deals look like. We knew, but we didn't have funds, right? So we didn't have cash. So what happened was we held the property, the first property probably happened like a year and a couple months.
Yeah.
A year coupled in a couple months, and we ended up doing a cash out refi, right? So we were just, a property appreciated, right? We had added a front door, we did landscaping, we just made it look pretty, right? We asked a realtor, the same realtor that we had, we asked her to pull some comps to see what it was worth, right? Because it had been about a year, so we was like, hey, let's just look at, you know, see what it's worth. Because we heard about a cash out refi. And come to find out, it had appreciated, I think, over 100K. Yeah, it was crazy. Like, the multi just shot up. Like, and the timing was right, too. Mm-hmm. We bought it in the winter, and we negotiated that deal well. When we got those inspections back, any item on that inspection, use that as leverage. You know, get a better deal, right? Especially the major issues. You know, you never want to overpay, especially in today's market. Get a good deal. But yeah, so, you know, that's what we did. So as far as the strategies that we use, you know, the other properties that we have in the contract, one of them is another house hack, right? So we're going to move from our current primary into that, right? So again, 3.5% down. That's because we refinanced out of our old FHA loan, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the benefits of doing a cash out refi, especially if you do a house hack, right? Because now you can use another loan, I believe, within a couple years, right? So anyway, you know, fast forward now, it's been a couple years, and, you know, now we're going to use a house hack for one of those. We use private money, so like family and friends, we give them a great return. I'm literally, you know, 15 to 20% return on our money, very good return, but, you know, we're only borrowing smaller amounts of money as what the equity spread will be from our all-in costs, our rehab costs, and then the after repair value. So since, you know what I mean, there's a large margin in there, we can give some of that money back. And these are our friends and family. So like, I'd rather take care of the people that, you know, took care of me, mm-hmm. and give them more money, just because, you know, that's going to continue. They're going to continue to, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship, right? It's a win-win. Right, you know, putting their money at work, giving them way more money than they would get in any other investment vehicle. They're taking risk with me. You know what I mean? They trust me with their money. So, you know, we can pay them out those, you know, aggressive returns, and we can still have, you know, sizable gains, like, you know, within the deal still. Typically when we do the cash out refi, we're at 75% loan to value. So we have like 25, you know, percent equity into the deal. These are, you know, larger deals. Like, our average after repair value is typically between like 350 and 450. So, you know, we got some wiggle room in there, but, more importantly, you know, it cash flows well. You know, this, the unit, the three unit cash flow 1300, got another apartment, the four unit, that is in Center City that we're doing Airbnb model. Airbnb is amazing. Mm-hmm. We were able to like double to triple our returns. And like in the hot season, like in the prime season for a couple months, we got triple. It was like 1 or 2 months in June and July. Those are the highest travel season. But double consistently. But we may have to change our business model because Baltimore's cracking down on Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. There's a whole lot in there I want to touch on. That's really amazing. So let's say, you know, you get a property today. What is that? Let's say you get under contract, you know, you get the property. What does that process look like, you know, just as far as kind of getting the funds from family and friends, you know, doing the rehab, cash out refi? Like, what does that process generally look like?
So, all right. So typically, we're always having conversation with lenders. I mean, this is what we know now, right? So at the time, it was kind of chaotic. It was like, as things would come up, we would just do. So if you listen to us talk now, you know, you can try to implement some of these things, but just know you're going to stumble, you're going to fall, you'll get back up, you'll be okay, and then, you know, you'll survive. So now, we're always having conversations with lenders, other lenders outside of friends and family, people who, you know, see opportunity in Baltimore, people who want to invest in Baltimore, but they may not have boots on the ground to actually get stuff done. And, you know, our business model is that we operate with integrity. And that's the one thing that's pretty rare, especially when you're doing any type of work and these significant rehabs. You know, a lot, oftentimes you're dealing with a lot of contractors, and especially if you're like from out of the area, it can be pretty risky. You know what I mean? Especially from, you know, somebody that you may not know and somebody that just may not be an honest person. And they may be willing to. You literally, our entire business model is, you know, just doing everything the right way. Yeah. Even when it comes down to, you know, how we place our tenants and how we treat our tenants. So pretty much like always sorting for cash, always looking for cash. The next step is we're always looking for properties, right? So right now we're kind of transitioning that just because we're starting to get more projects going on around us, so we don't want to stretch out too far. But the second phase is typically start looking for deals, right? And you can do all this stuff at different points in time. Like, it's not like you gotta do this step. There's gonna be a lot of overlap. So at night, you know, you may call your uncle and see if your uncle got, you know, a couple thousand that he can loan you on a deal. And then maybe the next morning you'll go and you'll start looking at deals, or, you know, maybe at the night, you know. So you just fit it in wherever you can. After you start finding deals and you find the deals that make sense, run all your numbers. Find somebody. I mean, there's a lot of people on social media. Find somebody that you know, that you follow, that you trust. Plug into one of them and then get access to their information, and I'll show you how to like look at the numbers, right? Because if you're not gonna do like research on how to like do a real pro forma, I mean, there are tools like the Bigger Pockets tool that you might can use, which we started out using, but there's other stuff that you may not know to include. So we always really recommend, like, I mean, you know, we met Kiera and Khalil on Instagram like I think 6 months after we got started. So we had just closed on our multi, but, you know, and they're Charm City buyers from out of Baltimore, right. Baltimore local. Mm-hmm. So we met them a couple months after we got into the game, and when we started, you know, see a little money coming in, we was like, hey, like, these guys are in Baltimore, they're doing that at a way bigger scale, you know.
They look like us,
you know what I mean? Like, let's see what they're talking about. So we found out that they had classes, we started signing up for their classes. Fast forward now, you know, we're all the way in, next gen member, you know, doing some interesting things as far as like community development. So, you know, at the point in time, you know, I think, right, like, after you start looking at deals, if you don't know how to source deals, if you don't know like what's a good deal, you can plug into these people so that way you can find out what a good deal looks like for your market. And maybe what kind of strategies even that you should employ to even generate revenue. Because you can do a lot of things with a property, right? Yet most people think, okay, I'll rent it to a person, right? To a family. But you can, you know, maybe have a commercial tenant, you know, like the assisted living. Maybe you can have, you know, you can rent it by room. You can rent it through Airbnb, right? You can do a lot of different, there's a lot of different ways to use, you know, a piece of real estate. So, you know, after that, you know, you run your numbers, you find a good deal. You already have the money now, right? The next step is we call up our title company to start preparing the paperwork. We'll get a contract, right? So we have our own contract now that we use, but before we had our agent do it. So pretty much once you find a house, right, your agent is always going to be there. So it's like you talk to the seller, your agent's like the third party, and then you're like, you know, you're the buyer, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like if you're looking through the MLS and you know, you're using an agent, right? We're just going to keep it simple. Your agent, after you tell them you want the property, the agent is going to prepare the contract, right? The seller, they'll send a contract to the seller. The seller will sign, they agree on the terms, and then they will forward that to their title company, or if you have a title company, you can use that title company. After it goes to the title company, at that point in time, the lender also gets a copy of that agreement, right? Whoever you found out that you're going to get the full amount of the loan for, right? And so this is like, this strategy, as far as getting investors, you get investors if you need investors, right? If you have the money, then you can just go directly to like negotiating with the sellers, right? So, you know, different things are going to be required at different points in time depending on your scenario. And that's why we always kind of recommend that coach, mm-hmm. Because they can guide you through to whatever you're going. But so, I mean, that's pretty much it. After you send it to the title company, you send it to the lender, they'll prepare their documents. They'll get everything going. At some point in time, you'll have your inspection, probably during your due diligence period, which that's very important. But I mean, asking it in that, yes. You want to talk about due diligence and yeah. some of the stuff we use to make sure we can get out?
Yeah, so you definitely want to make sure in your contracts that you have contingencies in there. So that's also kind of like a part of the process. So as he was saying, it's kind of hard to say like, you know, A, B, C, D, because these are things that kind of go, some of like, you know, impact the ebb and flow of the entire process. But when it comes to contingencies, these are ways to get out of a deal in the case that things aren't what you thought they were. So, you know, yes, definitely go look at pictures online. You know, MLS, they have pictures up there. Some of them are not great. But, you know, you may have properties that have, you know, some really nice pictures. And you're like, oh, okay, like this property looks really nice. And mm-hmm. then you actually, once you actually see the property with your home inspector, then that's kind of when they can walk through and they can see like, oh, okay, like the cracks on the walls are actually, they're like horizontal cracks and you have all these different, you know, there's mold growing here and, you know, just putting out different things to look for. So as you get these inspections and reports, you can put an inspection contingency in the contract and you can utilize that information to help you, you know, mitigate whatever purchase price you're comfortable with.
Exactly. You can get out. You can get out. You can get all your down payment, earnest deposit money that you put down. It's good faith estimate money to show them that you're serious. Typically, you know, you can have it be, you know, a couple $100. I mean, you can have it be, depending on your purchase price, right? You know, I mean, we've had deals that we got in a contract for $5. We had deals that we may put, you know, $1,000 in. But you always want to try to do as least money as possible, less risk as possible, right? Everything about this business is risk mitigation, right? Risk mitigation, right? You always want to make sure that you, you know, mitigating that risk. Otherwise, you know, things can't happen. And everything that we're talking about is all part of that risk mitigation process. However convoluted it is, you can, you know, persevere through it. Right. And the rewards are very plentiful, especially once you start getting up the scale. And there's so many examples online of so many dope people doing dope things. Shout out Mobile Home. Shout out our home team, Charm City Buyers. Definitely go check them out. Mm-hmm. But Mobile Home Elite Investors. Yep. In Chicago, Hood Estates. I mean, man, there's so many people to name.
Rashawn Scott.
Yeah. Tom Millie. Provado Life. Yeah. Like it's so many people like literally that's just doing dope stuff. Mm-hmm. And everybody's sharing information, you know, and you know, oftentimes, you know, honestly, typically the best information that we always got, it rarely came free, right? If you go through a book, you may go through an entire book, you may get two good pieces of actionable information that you can act on. Right, but with like a real like with a mentor that's doing something that you already want to do, you can go to them directly and you can ask them the exact question that you need at that exact point in time. So it's always like, you know, I always say, if you can pay the cost, pay the cost, right? Especially if you can pay the cost, pay the cost. When we started out, we didn't have the cash, so we couldn't do it. But as we got, you know, into the business, we started saving more. Right, as we start getting money from, you know, we were just stacking away the money we were spending in rent anyway. We were just saving it up. And as that pile grew, it was like, oh man, they got a course. All right, yeah, let's sign up for their course. Let's check them out. Let's go meet them in person. And yeah, that was really, really instrumental. But yeah, you always want to have financing contingencies. And you know, and that's going through the due diligence process, mm-hmm. right? Because after you sign the contract with the seller. You just want to make sure that if you find anything that, you know, you can pull out, you can get out at the last minute, you can get your money back.
But you have to do it within a specific time period. So yeah, if your due diligence period is within 14, you cannot be 14 days in 1 second, like over that. So you have to really make sure that you're staying on top of these things because you only have so many days to get it done. And then closing can be questionable sometimes, but let's say your contract says 30 to 45 days, you have to close. So you really have 2 weeks to, you know, get whatever you need to get done, because after that, if you can't get out of the deal, you kind of have to now figure out what you're going to do at that point.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, you know, when it comes to, because we get this question a lot as far as like, oh, like, what's your process? Like, what do you do? It's just, it really kind of depends on what your goals are and what you're trying to do. Because, yeah, you can say, oh, yeah, like, we're in real estate, but it's kind of like, what part of real estate are you in? Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to do a buy and hold, okay, cool. Like, that's different than you looking to do a fix and flip, mm-hmm. or you looking to do, you know, invest in mobile homes, or investing in, you know, storage containers, like whatever
or
the
wholesale
case is. Yeah, wholesaling.
Or commercial, you know, projects versus residential.
Right. So there's so many different things. So I think when it comes to that question, a lot of times we tell people, like, well, like, what is it that you're trying to do? Like, what are your goals? So it's like, yeah, it sounds cool to say, you know, for us, for example, once we get to 33 doors, then that's when we'll be able to actually, like work because we want to, not because we have to, because we're still working, right, our 9-to-5 right now. But that may not be, you know, was best for, you know, our next door neighbor who may be looking to do something totally different. So it kind of just depends on what it is that you want to do, because our process may sound like a lot to somebody who's not really interested in that type of journey that, you know, that we were going to take.
But hey, we know some wholesalers, I mean, their process is so simple. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm like, hey, I need to learn wholesaling. They're making money hand over fist.
Right.
And they don't got to deal with tenants.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So how do you convince your family members to help you out just with funding these projects? Was that difficult at first? Was it kind of like, oh, yeah, we'll definitely help you? You know, we believe in kind of what you're doing. What was that like for you?
I mean, honestly, man, it really wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Really wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. I mean, and honestly, a lot of it came down because I was their family and they trusted me. Like, I came from a close-knit family. Like, you know, we always believe that you should just do right, right? And for family, like, especially, like, you know, me and my brothers used to get in fight, and my grandma used to always say, love your brother no matter what, because he's the only one you ever had. And she just make us kiss each other and we'll go in a corner and, I don't know, start cracking jokes or doing something. But it was like, you know, we always had like a close-knit family. So, you know, and they saw over time me doing these crazy business ventures, you know, and some would work out, a lot would fail, but they would see me like continue to like progress forward, right? And then over time, you know, when we first got into our first investment, we didn't use any investors' money. We got in with, it was like, well, it really, we didn't get into any money after you got all the grants and all that stuff. I mean, we had to front like the down payment, which I think was $1,000 and maybe like a couple hundred for the inspectioning and appraisal. But, you know, maybe like $1,600 we had to put it back, but then we end up walking away with money. So, you know, it was difficult in the sense that I was just putting more pressure on myself. But when, you know, after we had already had a deal, we were making money. You know, we would tell them about the property. We would send them pictures of the property. And this wasn't with an intent to, like, get money from them. I mean, it was just us sharing. Just, yeah, hey, we got our first property. This is what it looks like. You know, this is what, you know, the rent is. This is something we're saving. We're living in one. Some of our family was like, what y'all doing? Like, y'all all right? Like, like, yeah, you know, yeah, we're going to play it. We got to play it. So over time, you know, they've seen us, you know, starting to grow. They saw what we were learning because we were sharing the information. And then, you know, when we finally went to them, you know, and asked them for a loan, they were like, oh, sure. I was waiting for you to ask. I mean,
definitely. Definitely. So,
I mean, okay, we did break down a deal. So don't get this wrong. Like,
they want to see the numbers.
Yeah, they want to see the numbers. So yeah. it can be straightforward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if we want to get into that now, but like literally just break your numbers down, right? You know your income, know your expenses. When you got your purchase price, you can get your interest rate from your banker, and then you can figure out, you know, what your mortgage will be over time. So you want to, you know, take all those expenses out of your overall revenue, get your profit, right? And then once you get your profit, then you can determine your cash on cash return. Most investors, you know, at most investors that are just starting out, new investors, cash on cash return is typically the only measure they didn't really care about. That and, you know, how long the term of the loan is. Right. So they want to know when I'm getting my money back and how much you want to pay me.
Yeah, definitely. definitely. So from securing the property, you know, you both two still have your 9-to-5s. How do you then, you know, manage the contractors, manage all the rehab? And are you doing full gut jobs on these properties?
So the property that we had closed on like earlier this year or very late last year, a couple of days before the end of the year, the 4-unit, that was our first big like rehab. So with that one, we definitely learned a lot with that. But as far as,
Yeah. So pretty much, it was a lot of ups and downs, right? We took a lot of bruises. We made a lot of mistakes. We dealt with a lot of contractors that were shady, right? That ran off with our money. We had one guy that we started him off on small jobs. We scaled him up to larger jobs, right? He was doing good. You know, everything was good. He was a good guy, personable guy. All of a sudden, you know, we get halfway through the project, guy vanishes. Literally, like, vanishes. Like, he's gone, missing for a couple of days. You know, try to get in contact with him, like, 2 weeks later. Finally did. And then he was like, oh, yeah, man, can I come back? Ready to start work. Dude came back, took his tools, said, oh, yeah, I'm going to get to work. As soon as I left out, went around a corner, dude ran out and just went off. Never saw him again. Right? So, you know, and we ended up going through like 7 contractors, right? This was before we got plugged into diversity buyers. Like, this was before we got mentorship, we just struggling through. We took a lot of bruises, yeah. Right? So I think like early on, especially dealing with contractors, right? You want to make sure that you vet them very well, right? You can get referrals. You can look at any type of reviews they have. You can pop up on their projects. If you're doing a large rehab and you've never seen that person work before, I will call them on your lunch break. Hey, man, how's it going? Hey, well, okay, you know, I'm ready to get this project started. Then like, oh, yeah, me too. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. What are you doing right now? You know, are you working? You know what I mean? You working on any projects? Like, oh, man, yeah, I'm working on a project right now. All right, oh, cool, if I stop by. You know, you get the address, you go on, you see what work they do, you see the quality of work they do, right? And then you can kind of get a sense of just immerse yourself in it, right? Immerse yourself in it, and then you'll start to learn these things, right? So I think starting out, you know, definitely do that background research, background investigative work, but you also want to make sure that you have a contract with your tenant, with your contractors, and only pay in draws, right? So a draw is just like, you know, let's say you got a $1,000 job, mm-hmm. right? You go to them, you say, we'll have 3 draws, right? We'll have draw 1, 2, and 3. You know, draw 1 will be the first draw, which typically is the initial deposit, right? So this is the money to start the work. Draw 2 is when they may get, you know, half of the way, maybe 2/3 of the way, right? You can negotiate this. This is your money, right? Yeah. The third thing, final, right? After everything's done, not you know, you still got to, nah, when everything is done, the excuses, you know, especially when you're starting out, right? If they starting out already, they say, oh, come on, man, but you know, I got an excuse. That's a shady sign. Tell them to finish, you know what I mean? Maybe you can pay them out a couple, but I would never pay out the full thing. Right, because anytime we pay it out early in advance, it never worked out. People don't have motivation after that, right? They already got their money. It's kind of like, oh, you know, I got the money now, so what, right? Especially people who don't operate with, like, you know, a sense of moral integrity and a hard work ethic. It's kind of like, but there are a lot of contractors out there like this, right? This is a common phenomenon. Anybody that has done any work on any house, they probably have a story too, right? So, you know, you definitely want to take precautions. Contracts are great. You know, doing the background research, getting referrals, all that's great. But you want to kind of do a couple of these things. You don't want to just do 1 or 2. Otherwise, you know, you're going to find out kind of with somebody, you know, shady. And then oftentimes it's going to cost you.
Yeah. That's definitely what we learned, the big gut jobs, especially starting out, and it was our first gut job. you definitely should have vetted a lot of contractors, like made some phone calls, like looked them up, things like that. So I think, you know, especially when you're starting out and you're working a 9-to-5, there's only 24 hours in a day. So you really have to learn how to find that balance between, you know, the demands of your 9-to-5 and the demands of, you know, your what's going on the property, especially with the contractors, right? Like, especially when they know you have a 9-to-5 and you can't be there to like watch them and make sure that they're doing their job.
They may take advantage.
They may take definitely take, advantage of that. So I definitely think, you know, making sure that you do your due diligence, not just when it comes to like running your numbers and contracts and things like that, but do your due diligence when it comes to hiring somebody, because that's what you're doing. Yep. You're hiring somebody to work for you to do a job. And if they're not doing that job, then they should be fired. Just like if you don't do your job at your 9-to-5, you would get fired.
Yeah.
So you have to treat it the same exact way. So, you know, there's a lot of people, like a lot of us who work 9-to-5s, you interview people, right? Interview these people, because this, especially if it is your money or your family's money, like do right by the money. So have the right people working for you.
And once you do, right? Once you have good people,
keep them.
Keep them. That means pay them well. That means treat them well. If they say, oh man, you know, can I get an advance on this one because I got something going on with the family, and you've done work with them and you trust them, you know, once or twice, okay, cool. You know what I mean? It's not a problem at all, right? But, you know, you never want to risk more than what you're willing, what you can comfortably lose, right? And oftentimes, like right now, I mean, now we're at a point where we're doing more rehabs, so we got more work for these guys. So, you know, they're going to skip out on a couple hundred dollars, and it wouldn't even make any sense, you know what I mean, in the long run. But it took us, you know, it took us years to build up to this. It took a lot of work, a lot of stressful nights, you know, but that's the story of entrepreneur. That's the story of anyone that is striving for anything or any level of success, right? You know, you have to persevere. So I would say, yeah, as far as how we can scale it now, how we're managing it now we're using those contractors that we built relationships with, and some of our family members as well.
Definitely.
Also looking at other, because currently we do self-manage right now as well. So since we are scaling up and we're, you know, having more doors, we're definitely looking for, you know, to hire somebody else to kind of like help out with that. So that's also a part of like the process. Question earlier, you know, working with property managers and things like that, like that's something that we are currently exploring, so that way we can again like start to focus on other things, like, you know, finding bigger deals or, you know, things of that nature.
Definitely. And that's really amazing. What I like about what you shared is that you went through 7 contractors, you know, you went through the bumps in the first big rehab. A lot of people would have been like, you know, I'm not doing this anymore. This real estate stuff is not for me. I lost, I'm done. But it seems like once you kind of figured that out and went through that and got the mentoring, that things took off. And now you're almost at 20 doors. So I really like the fact that you didn't give up. You kept going. You took it as a lesson. You didn't take it as a failure, and you learned from it. So that was awesome.
Definitely. Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's growing up, you know what I mean? That's exactly. That was the only option. Like, you, I mean, yeah, really, and that's the only option in life. I mean, you got to persevere. I mean, you'll always have an obstacle. You know what I mean? Just get through it and then on to the next, especially when your dreams and your goals are worth it, right? The reason that we're doing this is like this, so that way we can start a family. Right? So we can start a family and we can start to support our other family members. You know what I mean? We're not really at that point yet, but that's where we want to get to, right? And that goal, that dream is worth it. Right, it's worth the long nights. It's worth the, you know, the headaches. It's worth, you know, the sacrifices. Right, everybody wants to know, how do you balance all this? You don't. You just pick and choose priorities, and you try to make time, and you just do the best you can. You know what I mean? Certain things you'll fit in. Certain things may not. If it's not high priority, it may not make it today. You know what I mean? So, you know, prioritize well. You know, anytime it means, all right, if you're spending like, you know, wasting time playing video games, I don't know, on the gram or whatever, then yeah, you can cut stuff like that down, like if it's non-productive time. But really, like, man, this past year, we've been really digging in, no breaks. I think we took like 1 week or 2 weekends to vacation. Typically we'll do like a whole 2 weeks or something. But nah, this year we've been just digging in all year.
Yeah.
But we've seen like significant gain.
Right.
Definitely. And how many of those doors did you get this year?
So the 6 are under contract. They're obviously from this year. We got a 4 unit we closed on earlier, and then we have and then we have another unit. We closed on a row home. It's gonna be a full gut.
Wow.
So yeah. So what's that? 6. 11.
Wow. That's amazing. Just to go from that experience you had at the top of the year, and now things took off. So that's just a testament to not giving up, and that's really inspiring just for anyone, you know, who listens to this. You're gonna, you know, the theme is that you're gonna go through things, you're gonna fall on your face, but you either give up or you figure out a way to make it work for your good. So that's really awesome. Exactly. That's really awesome.
One quick point too, I definitely want to make, because earlier you said what strategies we use. So just real quick and succinct. So we're using house hacking strategy. Mm-hmm. We're using BRRRR strategy. We're raising private capital, right? And we use hard money too to finance the rehabs, right? So then that's part of the BRRRR strategy. That's how we acquire the building. That's how we fund the rehab, and then we refinance it with our local bank, Or even if you want to go through a broker or whatever. But that's when we get like a long-term loan, a 30-year loan fixed typically, as opposed to a hard money loan is a shorter loan. You may have like 9 to 12 months and a higher interest rate. And typically it's interest only. So it's expensive. There are other options, but we just like that they're fluid. They can get cash to you quickly. Yeah, they don't got to keep pulling your credit. You know, they're more lenient. So it just works with, you know, it helped us move quick, but it did cost us. So, you know, you can just weigh that out with your priorities and what you're trying to do. But
factor it into your numbers.
But yeah, Google that stuff, check that stuff out. Yeah. And then that's what we use, you know, just a mix of all that together. You put a couple house hacks in there, you put a couple birds in there, a couple refinances in there. And then next thing you know, you're just taking that same cash and you just rolling it, you know what I mean? We're generating wealth from just improving these buildings, right? Just providing value. And in a sense, like successful real estate investors, developers, that's what they do. They just add value. So we're doing that through, you know, rehabs, providing people with nice, safe homes. And you know, we love our tenants, like, you know, and especially we've been doing the property management ourselves, so we maybe been a little bit too attached. So you know, we're starting to transition that just because we want to focus on scaling up. And we know that at this point in time, you know, we're not in a place to do that reliably. So we'll rather outsource that, make sure that's still handled well, and just manage the manager. And then we can focus on getting more deals, learning more. We're still investing in our education, and, you know, pulling capital from friends and family.
Definitely. And something else, it's kind of a related point. So there are a lot of misconceptions about Baltimore. I've spoken to, you know, just people who just have bad things to say about the city and our communities and things of that nature. And I have my own feelings about that. I believe that, you know, if someone should be investing where our communities are, why not? It should be us and helping to improve the homes and the life, the quality of life of people living there. So I just want to hear, since you two are on the ground, what is the reality of what's happening in Baltimore? Contrary to what's in the media, what's been historically said about it, what we've seen on TV and such, like what is happening in the market?
Yeah. Yes. So it's interesting because the things you hear about Baltimore is just like, it's just wild. Just like, you know, like you said, like any of our communities, it's like, is it really? And that's kind of like my issue with Bigger Pockets is that, you know, they consistently call Black communities war zones. Mm-hmm. Yep. But it's like, it's not as bad as like they make it seem. And so a lot of times I think that that is a strategy. I think it's propaganda. So like, I remember going to work when Trump made the comment about like, you know, oh, there's rats running around Baltimore, whatever, whatever. And people are like, oh my gosh, like, do you hear what he said about Baltimore? And I'm like, yeah, I heard what he said, but do you also know that his son invests in Baltimore? So it's just like, it's propaganda. So I feel like a lot of times the media does that so that way they can try to like scare people away. So that way the people with the real big money start investing in those areas. So if you, you know, if you're, I don't know if you're familiar with Baltimore, but there's literally, you know, development happening everywhere. There's everywhere. Not a part of the city where you can go and there's not, you know, tractors and bulldozers and dumpsters like on the streets and things like that. So if there are things happening in these quote unquote war zones. And so I think that people are seeing the value in those areas, which I find like really interesting that, you know, growing up, you hear all these different things. And, you know, I have family out in this area. So like as a kid, I'm originally from Delaware. So most people in Delaware, they go up to Philly. So we used to come down to Baltimore. So I always had more of an attraction to this area anyway. But I always looked at it as like a beautiful city. Like it's more to the harbor than Baltimore. So, you know, hearing things even growing up, like, oh man, you don't want to go to Bad News Baltimore. Like it's not, you know, it's not a place that you want to go. But it's actually like really dope. It's a lot of like, you know, museums and artsy type things out here, entertainment, a lot of universities and colleges in the area, hospitals, you know, a lot of government agencies. And so there's a lot of opportunity that is in the area. And I think that people are starting to see that and just utilizing the media as propaganda, you know, to scare people away from the city. But what we're finding is that it's definitely changing very quickly.
Definitely. And also, you know, I will say this, you know, Baltimore is a black city that has suffered from a lack of investment for decades, right? You know, if you really look at the history of the city, you know, white flight, redlining, all these things, you know, really culminated in people leaving the city. So you have a city built for 1 million people and it's currently around 600,000. Wow. Right. So there's a lot of homes that, you know, are blighted, neighborhoods that are blighted. Right. But, you know, there's pockets. Right. It's a huge city. Right. So, you know, what we like and why we're really, you know, why we're really passionate about doing this is that we're able to go into these communities, these black communities where people look like us. Right. And we're able to help change the community. Right. And, you know, gentrification gets a bad word. Right. It gets a bad rap. But it's nothing wrong with gentrification as long as you're keeping the makeup of the community, right? You know, there are people, right, amongst our community that have stable jobs, have been working at the same job for who knows how long, right? There are people that, you know, they have enough resources to afford a nice place, and they should have a nice place, right? They should have a safe place. They shouldn't have to worry about, you know, rodent issues. They shouldn't have to worry about, you know, a leaking pipe or a leaking roof. Right. You know, and a lot of times you'll see, you know, landlords in the history and even till today, a lot of landlords, you know, they aren't good landlords. Yeah. You know, that's where the term slumlords come from, where, you know, people are living in despicable conditions. Right. And we didn't want to be that. Right. We wanted to give an alternative. We wanted to get into real estate investments so that way of sure make money, but we could also have an impact to our community. And, you know, people that look like us, people that are good people, you know, walk down the street, you know, smile. You know, there's a lot of friendly people around the city. Like Ashley said, Baltimore gets a bad rap, but typically I agree with her wholeheartedly that it's propaganda. If you're actually on the ground and you're in Baltimore, there's hot spots all around the city. North Baltimore, Center City Baltimore, West Baltimore, South Baltimore, opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity. So, you know, houses sell for as little as $5,000, but there's some houses that sell for, you know, $400,000, right? So there's a lot of margin in there that you can bring value, right? And that, you know, that's the name of the game that we're in, bringing value for our community.
Yeah, really showing people the true charm of Charmer City. Because, like, when you really do – like experience Baltimore, like I feel like anybody that I run to who's actually love it And I think that also with the Airbnb, that kind of also gives us an opportunity to change that narrative as well. So people who are coming out of town for shorter term trips, who originally may have been like, I don't know, you know, The Wire, right? They actually can come into our space and really feel like that charm and like, wow, like exposed brick and the original features that have been here. Like one of our four units was built in, what, 1879,
yeah.
You know? So it's like old house, but we were able to bring back those original features so that way people can really feel the experience of being like in Baltimore. And then also just having access to different things, and we're not far from DC and really any of the major cities on the East Coast. Baltimore is really one of the more, probably the most affordable city if you look at between New York City going down to Washington, DC, or really going down towards Richmond. It's one of the most affordable urban cities that's really on the East Coast, Mid-Atlantic area.
Definitely. Yeah, don't sleep on Baltimore.
Definitely. But I mean, I think that's the game. You know, why shouldn't we be the ones helping our communities, helping to beautify them, helping to improve the homes? I don't see why we would run away from that. You know, I just believe we're in a stage where, you know, the media is telling people a lot of things, and, you know, bigger pockets is good. You know, it's good for certain things, but you know, I read bigger pockets, but I think you got to take stuff with a grain of salt, and you really have to, you know, look towards people who are on the ground, who are in the communities, and not just listen to people who are on forums and have their own personal interests. And so, you know, because of their own personal interests, they want to kind of guide the conversation in another direction. And like you said, you know, this guy's, his son is invested in Baltimore. And if we look at our history, who are the ones that have invested in our communities and made money? Why can't it be us that makes money, but it also helps other people? Absolutely. So I really like the fact that y'all are trying to, you know, leave a footprint in Baltimore and improve the community. That's really, really a positive thing and a good thing to look up to. Definitely,
yeah, man. Hey, man, you know, I wouldn't be in this business. I was telling a relative of one of our troubled tenants earlier today. Very nice lady. I was telling her today, I would have gotten this business, I was just trying to make a bunch of money. Like, there's other businesses to where you can get in and there's just less headache. But, you know, it's something about, you know, getting into these rehabs, seeing them, you know, this dilapidated house, and then bringing it back, restoring it, restoring these original features, and then putting a family in there, you know, a safe place, a place that you know it was done right. You know, it's, you know, as a above and beyond, you know, the financial gain, is there's a feeling that you get that you just can't replace. So, you know, God willing, I'll be doing this until the end, until the wheels fall off.
definitely. So you're around 20 doors now. What's next? Like, what is the big goal? What is the big carrot, if you will, that you're chasing?
Oh, that's a great question.
Start a family, yeah, man. Start a family.
Financial freedom as far as like, well, one thing that we actually made a goal and we kind of accomplished it was paying down all debt that's like over 10%, because we do want to like make sure we leverage our debt. So, you know, the credit card bills and, you know, stuff like that. So getting rid of credit card bills and really like make sure that we're managing that. And then also getting rid of probably student loans eventually, but making sure we're strategic about it. So yeah, being debt free, making sure that we leave, you know, generational wealth. So that way our children and our children's children, and their children, they don't have to go through a lot of the obstacles that we went through, because both of us, you know, yeah, we were blessed. Like, don't get me wrong. I know I was blessed. Darian was definitely blessed. And I mean, both of our families together are blessed, but because of where we come from and who we are, we weren't able to have access to a lot of the things that, you know, could have made us progress further. You know, it maybe put us in positions like a lot of the folks that are on bigger pockets to maybe make our business go a little bit, you know, quicker. And so we want to make sure that our children kind of have more of a leg up as opposed to starting from ground zero, not having to worry about inheriting debt and things like that, like inheriting assets. Yeah. So that's kind of like the bigger picture, and then also goal. Making sure we spread the knowledge and information out to the community as well.
Exactly, community uplift. Like, community uplift is everything. Like,
We have to uplift our community. Our community needs more access to resources, right? And the reason one of the richest, if not the richest, African-American man, Byron Allen, said that we need access to resources, like if he said we need access to resources, I'm pretty sure we should listen to the guy, right? You know, he's a way better businessman than our current president. But anyway, I digress. So I say all that to say, you know, we're really, you know, trying to just, yeah, start a family, just trying to build, man. Just trying to build, you know, leave our community in a better place than how we found it.
Definitely. And do you plan to, you know, stay in the Baltimore market and make as much impact as you can there? Or have you taken interest in potentially other markets?
That's a great question, dude. You always ask good questions. Right? That's why I like your interview. I'm like, he asks. But seriously, man. So we're always looking for opportunity, right? I feel like that's just being an astute investor, and then like you get naturally curious. So we are looking at other areas. We are looking at other asset classes. At the end of the day, right, our whole goal is to generate enough money so that way Ashley can stop working. And I can put a baby in her, and then I can stop working eventually, and then we can start a family. We can travel. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll figure something out. But you know, we can do stuff for family, right? We can be around family more, right? We can have family trips. We'll have time, and not really. I mean, I don't know. Every day going to work is just something about necessarily having. Like, you know, my boss could come in, my supervisor can come in every day. He'd be like, you know, it's just not working out. I'd be like, I may be like, you know what, you're right. I mean, because, you know, I don't really have an affinity for necessarily being an employee. But, you know, I as a means to an end. So, you know, do what you got to do to get to where you want to go. Right. So, you know, it's a stepping stone. Right. So. You know, long term, man, trying to scale this thing, start a family in all seriousness, and then, to see where life takes us, you know, raise some kids like us, and I don't know.
Yeah, and really them, just build them community.
Yeah, yep.
Know, definitely. Because I know, like, growing up for me, like, my parents used to do a lot for the community. They would have these big cookouts, and we had big kickball games, and like, I love seeing kids, like, outside running around playing. So, like, I would want our kids to have that same experience. Like, no, you're not going to be in here playing video games all day. Go run around. Like, go explore and have fun, you know, to an extent because people are crazy nowadays. But that's kind of basically what we want to do. Start a family and also make an impact on the community and really make sure that we spread the knowledge so that way it's not just us generating generational wealth, but that we can also, you know, provide access to resources so that other people in our community can also provide generational wealth. So that way us as a whole can begin to be uplifted.
That is true wealth. That's true wealth. I think Virus said something about that too. I don't know. Check out that interview too.
I gotta check that out.
I'm not sure. You probably checked out. Yeah. That was a good one. But yeah, now in all seriousness, you know, it has to be wealth, you know, you just having access to resources by yourself, you know what I mean? Like it's all about spreading that wealth. That's why we always look to build relationships, especially in this business. Relationships are everything. That's why I was saying you may want to just front the guy, you know, the money if he needs it, like, or the girl or whoever, right? I mean, but really, like, you know, it's all about relationships. And I mean, treat people good, and typically they'll treat you good. And if not, you know, be willing to cut ties early on. Remember, hire slow, fire fast. Right? Hire slow, fire fast. You know, especially if. You know, it's your money, so you don't have to go with, you know, any contract.
Definitely. And, you know, we got a lot of great nuggets, a lot of great tips and advice in this interview. What is one thing that you would tell an inspiring investor to do just to get started? You know, could be someone who's just interested, curious. What is one thing you would tell them to do in the beginning if they just they're just starting out?
One thing, yeah, I would say education, you know, listening to podcasts, audiobooks, things like that. So basically listening to education and then taking that education into action So I just recently finished, the 7 highly effective skills of successful people. And he was basically saying, like, right from the gate, like, it's not really going to matter what you're, like, learning, pretty much. Like, you have to put these things into action to actually understand what it is that you're learning. Because even when it comes to, like, having a mentor, they can tell you all these things, right? But you're not really going to know until you actually do it yourself. So that's what I would say. Get started with, you know, pulling information from, you know, audiobooks, podcasts. Maybe start reaching out to some people, and then, you know, go start taking action. You know, after you get that education, you know, out of all the things that we said, do what's free first. That's what I would say. Do what's free first. So that way you can start building from there.
Hey, she's dropping gems, man. I was going to say action. Hey, right now, why y'all, what y'all doing? Yo, go. We gave y'all a bunch of actionable steps you can take. Hit up a realtor. Hit up a banker. You know what I mean? If your credit jacked up anyway, why are you scared your credit gonna get red? It's already jacked up. It'll be all right. You can make your credit better. Right? It's not life sentence. Right? Take action, y'all. Take action. You'll get there.
Definitely. And what books and resources have helped you? So what are some of your favorite books? And also, I know you mentioned some mentorings. Can you also mention to us different courses or mentoring programs that people can look into?
Yeah. So, my favorite book right now is still The One Thing, just because, like, a lot of times I've had issues, like, with prioritization. So, like, it really, like, forces you to, like, focus on really what's the action that you can do that's going to get you, that's going to make everything else easier or not necessary. So it's like, you know, what's the one thing I can do, you know, in my relationship to make everything else not needed or making everything else easier, not needed, right? You can replace relationship with anything, right? Finances, spirituality, health, right? So, you know, that's really big for me right now. But there's always, other books like Robert Kiyosaki's books are really good. Cash Flow Quadrant, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 4-Hour Work Week. I mean, those are some good ones that, like, were impactful. And typically, you know, you get like nuggets, you know what I mean? Like, you may get 2 or 3 things, you may get one thing. I mean, so, but yeah, those right now are some ones that I really like.
Yeah, I know for me, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That's still one of my favorites. I actually need to go back and reread that. That's really good. And then I'm also currently reading, Atomic Habits. And that's an amazing audiobook that I'm listening to right now. But yeah, we basically just try to keep finding new books to read or listen to. So for me right now, I'm on book 13 for the year. So I've been trying to, like, set goals as far as, like, how many books that I want to read for the year. So I'm trying to, like, always increase that. So that way, you know, I can continue to learn, but also try to take what I'm learning and put that into action.
Action. In regards to courses, definitely recommend Charm City Buyers courses. They have a lot of courses. Go check them out. You know, if you're interested in Next Gen program, you can hit us up or you can hit them up directly, and we can give you a referral. There is an application process, so, you know, you always want to, you know, just because you apply, you know, it's a very selective screening process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just want to make sure that you're a person that's actually ready and you're going to take action. Mm-hmm. That's really, you know, what it comes down to, right? Not, you know, because at the end of the day, it's just to drive you to take action, give you access to resources, give you access to information, but you're still going to have to take action yourself, right? You're still going to have to do these things, right? You know what I mean? You got to contact, you're still going to pick up the phone and call them. So, you know, definitely recommend their courses. Check them out.
Especially if you're interested in investing in Baltimore. Yep. Because, yes, you can definitely use this for a lot of the information. It's transferable. Mm-hmm. But we do focus specifically on Baltimore. But there are people who are in other states who are part of the program. So, you know, even if you're in California, if you're in Texas, and you have an interest in Baltimore, join the program if you're interested, because it's a great city. Mm-hmm. And then we could also build connections wherever that you're at. Oh, so,
exactly.
Yeah.
Also, she just reminded me, We also offer one-on-one coaching sessions now. So if you guys, you know, want to like give us a call, we can set up some time, and we can give you actionable information for like wherever you're at now. Literally, like, you know, these forums are good. Like, I'm sure you guys got gems, but I know there's a bunch of you out there. It's like, man, they didn't say anything about my specific problem, right? And a lot of times that can be frustrating. So, hey, you can find us on Instagram at Kemetic Capital. That's K-E-M-E-T-I-C, capital C-A-P-I-T-A-L. There you can go. Click the link for a one-on-one coaching session. Get some time with us and, you know, we can chat it out, figure out a way to, you know, get you to your goals quicker, get you to take action, help you with that, you know, having some accountability.
Right. So. And I would say as far as mentors, it also depends on where you're investing. If you're looking at Chicago, if you're looking at Detroit, if you're looking at Houston, Atlanta, Miami, Akron, Ohio, like look and see who's already investing in those areas. Mm-hmm. So that way you can start to make those connections and plug into them. But when it comes to mentorship, make sure that it makes sense. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go to this seminar because they're coming to your city and, you know, it's free. If you sit through this 4-hour seminar, and then when you wanna, yeah, it comes to come to find out it's $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. And it's like, if anybody is asking to that for that much money to mentor you, like that's not a mentor. Like that may be a scam. Not to, you know, throw shade at anybody, but
hit us up. It does, you got $30,000.
We can make that money work.
A whole lot better, ways you can spend that money, exactly. Especially in Longwood City.
Exactly. Because you can take that money and invest it as opposed to
giving
it, because those are like the gurus. You want to watch out for those. But people who are in the community, boots on the ground, they know people in the community, they're building connections, they're making moves in their city, connect with those people. And they look like you, connect with them. Because a lot of times, like, that's what a lot of times what we're looking for. That's what we need. We just need somebody to pull us up. Yeah. So look for those people. They're out there in all the major cities. You can find somebody who looks like you, who's doing the same thing that you're trying to do.
And sometimes even if they don't necessarily look like you, maybe you can still have that relationship, build that relationship to get to the next level.
Exactly.
Right? Because you know what I mean? There's, you know, it's nice to have people like that look like you, right? But, you know, even still, there's other people in the community that are willing to help you.
Right.
Absolutely. Right? So never be, you know, afraid to like go have a conversation and try to build a relationship, especially if you see something that you like that, you know, someone's doing, they're doing exactly what you want to do, go talk to them. Right. Talk to them, have a conversation. You may have to pay them for their time, right? Because, you know, that's the one thing we can't get back, right? I mean, is our time. So, I mean, but, you know, if they're where you want to be, and they have something that you think that you can learn from them, ask yourself, is it worth the cost? Can you afford to pay the cost? Mm-hmm. If this is your last, if it's your rent money, don't do it. You know what I mean? But if you got some extra cash and, you know what I mean, you're looking to get into this thing and you're serious, right? And they're, you know, charging, you know, something that you can afford, why not? You know, how much are your dreams worth? Do you really want, or you can just go out and just take action, right? But just don't make an excuse. Whatever it is, just don't make an excuse.
Definitely. Wow. Well, this has been an incredible interview. So many good nuggets, and it's just been amazing to, you know, see where you started, going through some bumps and just taking off. I mean, a lot of good nuggets. I'm really appreciative of you both taking the time. I want to rewind it already and watch it again. But thank you both so much.
Hey, brother, appreciate the invite. Yes, seriously. Definitely. Thank you. Thank you for your opportunity.
Absolutely. We'll definitely be in touch. And everyone, thank you for listening in to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. You can find us at Black Real Estate Dialogue on Instagram and Kemetic Capital. They already let you all know how to find them. Definitely hit them up, follow them, see what they're doing on Instagram and continuing to change and transform the city of Baltimore.
Movement has the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics, be the good gifter this year. Shop 30 to 60% off now at movement.com and enjoy fast and free shipping. That's MVMT.com.
Listen up, folks. Time could be running out to lock in a historic yield at Public.com. As of September 23rd, 2024, you can lock in a 6% or higher yield with a bond account. But here's the thing. The Federal Reserve just announced a big rate cut, and the plan is for more rate cuts this year and in 2025 as well. That's good news if you're looking to buy a home, but it might not be so good for the interest you earn on your cash. So, if you want to lock in a 6% or higher yield with a diversified portfolio of high yield and investment-grade bonds, you might want to act fast. The good news? It only takes a couple of minutes to sign up at public.com. And once you lock in your yield, you can earn regular interest payments even as rates decline. Lock in a 6% or higher yield with a bond account at public.com. But hurry, your yield is not locked in until you invest. Brought to you by Public Investing, member FINRA and SIPC. Yield to worst is not guaranteed. Not an investment recommendation. All investing involves risk. Visit public.com/disclosures for more info.